We're so, you know, there's so many topics I want to cover with Dan Haar from CT Insider in studio with us. And I do want to start a little bit. I want to talk about the debate. And we should have had you in for longer because I know there's a ton to talk about. But you've been a journalist in this state for how long?
43 years.
Right. Well, you started on your second birthday.
I think this is the first time I've ever admitted that publicly.
You look good.
Thank you.
I will say that.
You mean I'm walking around?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a... Yeah, no, you do look good. What I want to ask you, I mean, the one thing I've not to try to hit it over our listeners' heads with a hammer here, but it is 9/11. And it always makes me pause and think about where I was in life, where I was physically that day, and what my thoughts and feelings were. I'm just curious if you could share with us, like, where you were, what your day was like on that day.
I'm glad you brought it up, first of all. Thank you for that. I was in the middle of my career. I was the second week of being a columnist. I became a columnist on September 4th, 2001, week earlier, business columnist at the Hartford Current. I had written local feature columns before. And so I was second week in my life as a full-time columnist, and I've been pretty much that since, or an editor. And I was playing tennis that morning with three master reporters, John Lender, Andrew Julian, and Matt Moser.
Oh, wow.
Matt Moser, who passed away recently. Yeah. And Matt Moser looked up, the only one who wasn't working as a reporter, he was a copy editor. He looked up in the windows and he said, "Guys, something's going on. Look at the people, they're gathering." And the other three of us, you know, said, "No, there's nothing going on. Play tennis. Go ahead and serve." And of course, it was people gathering around the TV in a way that was urgent. And we didn't have, we had pagers that were going off in our bags because in those days it wasn't that sort of instant communication.
Right.
You know, but I was dispatched that day to downtown Hartford to the American Airlines building. And that was, we had at the time. A
lot of reporters.
400
yeah.
people in news at the Hartford Current. And contrast that today with 30.
Right.
So it's a different world. And so people had a very narrow piece of it. I later went to New York, in the subsequent days. But that very day. I had a lot of time to reflect. You know, my first cousin lived two blocks from the site, and you know, for a while nobody knew where he was, and his kids were at the school right there, so there was a little, you know, family stuff. He ended up writing about that. My immediate job was to go to American Airlines building, and they were doing, you know, what you would expect. Nobody knew anything at the time, and of course. I remember being in the car in downtown Hartford when the North Tower fell. And if I remember correctly, I didn't look it up. It was 10:02 a.m. Is that the?
I don't know the exact time, but that sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we actually have to pause here at 8:46 to let the bells chime for the first plane hitting the tower. So, yeah, it's just one of those things. I end up just taking away. It's like. I was living in Connecticut too. I don't know. I have a lot of different emotions, but I mean, you had to separate it because you had to do work and you had like the business angle or what have you. But I mean, you remember the first time you saw a plane return to the sky? Remember, like, it was just like the weirdest thing.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that because there are two ways of thinking about 9/11. One is the immediate shock of the moment, you know, and seeing the planes hit, especially when the first plane hit. We didn't see the first plane hit because we were all doing our lives, but seeing the second plane hit, and there's the immediate shock. And then there's the literally 20 to 25 years of after effects. And those after effects came to define a generation. And that shock is as important as the initial shock.
Yeah, no doubt. Dan Haar joining us from CT Insider. In about 5 minutes, we'll talk about the debate. He's got some very strong opinions on that. Dan Haar with us here from CT Insider. You go to ctinsider.com. Let's get to it because we don't have a ton of time. What'd you think of last night?
Well, I mean, there's no question that Kamala Harris did the one thing she had to do, which is show she is presidential. The bonus was that Trump went off the rails, and you didn't expect that, and it happened.
Now, I get a lot of people on the right who say it was just brutally unfair and stacked, that she didn't get fact-checked and that the moderators were tougher on him. Do you think it was a 3-on-1 dynamic?
Who cares? Nobody cares.
Why?
She won the debate and he lost the debate. Nobody looks back and says, oh, it was unfair, because his very culture that he has created of complaining about every single thing makes that factor a non-factor. Let's talk about inflation. Whose fault is inflation, right? Do you hear her saying inflation was the reason, was the fault of you and of COVID? He created $7 trillion in printed money. That's called inflation. Right? The Democrats don't make that argument. He dismantled the global trade system. This inflation was caused by supply chain. The Democrats don't make that argument. It's too bad. Tough. Yes, I agree. I do agree that they ganged up on Trump. I do agree.
So I think that, first of all, the inflation thing, I don't agree with you. I think there was a missed opportunity on her side. Inflation from the pandemic was a global issue. And it turns out the United States actually did a better job than almost every developed nation in bringing it back down.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with that point.
But it wasn't like his fault either.
Right,
like you don't know what.
Okay, I maybe went overboard by saying it was his fault. It was not the fault of Biden Harris versus Trump. And she doesn't make that argument, nor did he, nor do the Democrats in Congress.
But you're right. And so I look at the blind spots as this. I look at when she was asked, are we better off than 4 years ago? She didn't really answer it. And I think the border and the international unrest are her three weaknesses, right? And for him, it's about did he regret Jan 6? He never answered that. He never even said a shred of anything about when asked about climate change. And of course, abortion and denying that the election was the results were legitimate. And you think that she did enough to offset the criticisms of her handling of the border, of her and the administration's responsibility for what's going on in Gaza and Ukraine, et cetera?
No, she didn't do enough on the issues, but who cares? It wasn't about the issues. This debate was about temperament, character, and leadership style. Nobody cares about the issues. They're not voting on the issues. They're basically both off-the-shelf standard Democrat-Republican, and people are going to vote the issues if they feel strongly about those issues. For anyone who's making the decision that's swinging this election, that is swing voters in the seven states we all know, especially Michigan and Pennsylvania, they don't care about those issues. They care about what she looks like on stage, not physically, but how she behaves on stage. And she nailed it.
So Dan Harr from CT Insider here with us on Brian & Company. And I urge people to go to our website, WTIC.com. We talked earlier with Ozzie Palomo, a Republican lobbyist with Chartwell Strategy. So if you want to balance out the perspectives, you can get that balance. So then the question is, do you think, and Ozzie's point was he doesn't actually think it'll make a material difference. He thinks it's a base election, and whoever gets more of their base to come out will win. Do you think something like last night, if people do agree with you or not, that if they think that she did better, most people think she did do better, but do you think it'll matter?
Does it matter? That's the question. I was looking back in history this morning, and Clinton Bush in 1992 – the middle of those, I think there were three or four debates. Clinton absolutely killed Bush. This is the one where Bush was looking at his watch, right? And in that case, Clinton was ahead in the polls and Bush never recovered.
Right.
So that's different from a neck and neck. I am struggling to think of an election where somebody lost it in a close election. So he's right about that. But this could be the exception because it was so strongly a win. On the other hand, you have Obama having lost the first debate against, Romney. And you had Reagan lost the first debate against Mondale, and they both went on to...
Are we going to get a second debate?
Ironically, she wants it and he doesn't, which he should be desperate. He should be screaming for another debate. I think that if we get another debate, we're going to get the same result because this was not a fluke. This was not her catching the wind.
That's your opinion.
This was not her catching the wind.
So the two issues to follow up on, even I get responses in real time from listeners and so on, is... Do you think it's disrespectful to the voter to say that they don't care about the issues?
I don't know. I wrote it in a column on Monday. I guess it's a little disrespectful. Yeah, the issues do matter. I would say the issues matter. I care, and a voter should care about these issues. I'm just saying that's not how people are making a decision here. The question was, can Kamala Harris look and be presidential?
You went to Southern Connecticut State University. People don't know, like someone like Dan, he goes and watches the debate with some college students, then drives back, then has to write He has to talk to people after the debate. Then he has to drive back and write it. What time did you go to bed?
I'm losing my edge, Brian. It took me till 3:15 to file the story.
3:15. So then you can't go right to bed either.
Dan Hoare in 2001 writes that story in 90 minutes instead of 2 hours.
So would you discover, what are some of the observations you had watching with, and this wasn't like a Democrat or Republican. This was just an open student union type viewing.
It was overwhelmingly Harris, but there were Republicans there.
Okay,
the college Republicans were invited, the college Democrats. There were about 50 people in the audience, and the response, overwhelmingly surprising me, was laughter. They picked up, they watched quietly, relatively quietly, not so many on their devices, some, but not overwhelmingly. They were watching the debate, and then in the crazy zinger lines, like the dogs, of course, and the ridiculous solar remark, and the Biden doesn't know whether he's alive, laughter. People were laughing, and I talked with them about it, and they said, look, this guy is ridiculous.
Now, Connecticut is such, you know, it really is a blue state. You said Pennsylvania and Michigan. We got about a minute left. Why'd you pick those states? Because I think Pennsylvania is huge, but I think of Nevada and Georgia as maybe more important than a Michigan. So I'm just curious why you picked those two.
Well, I think Pennsylvania and Michigan are the biggest two of the seven swing states, and that's why I picked them. And also because they along with Wisconsin, I think of the upper Midwest heartland as being in some way indicative of the country, in addition to being swing states. So I don't think either one can win without Michigan.
Do you think that we haven't gotten the ratings? I mean, of all the elections and cycles you've been a part of, just really quickly, like, how important do you deem it? Do you deem it, like we always say, this is the most important of our lives, or do you really think that this one is that important?
Well, it's very important because of what Trump stands for. This is not Bush-Gore. Right, where you have, you know, two likable, relatively centrist chaps. The issue isn't that Trump is far to the right; he's not, and that Harris is far to the left; she's not. It's the styles, right?
A lot of people think she is, though, and she's
they're just wrong. I mean, that's just Trump is not an extremist, and neither is Harris. They're both mainstream representatives of their party in terms of policy. The difference is that on the Republican side, you have a populist. A populist is extremely unpredictable and volatile, as we saw in his first term, and the second term, because of the Supreme Court decision and because of experience, his experience will be even more extreme.
And I have to qualify the thoughts of Dan Hars or Dan Hars,
oh, yeah.
Not the thoughts of the show or myself.
Or my employer.
Yeah, of course. And it's always, listen, we welcome and we want all perspectives here on Brian and Company. So Dan, as always, and it takes no small amount of courage to give your opinion. So thank you.